Hey, Talk Shop fans. Join me and Fenimore Lane at the Mayflower Inn and Spa for a celebration of design on Saturday, May 18th. Journey to the Connecticut countryside to shop our all-day design bazaar with over 30 amazing home, fashion, and lifestyle vendors. Or take part in our summit with two one-of-a-kind panels featuring locally and internationally recognized designers and thought leaders, plus a floral workshop, children's activations, a picnic by the pond, and more. There's no time to wait, so learn more and pick up your day pass by visiting the link in the show notes or via my Instagram bio. I can't wait to see you all there. Is there a favorite element about the design process for you?
Oh my gosh, I love it all. You know, as I've grown as a designer, like I really, you know, I see the whole picture now. So when I'm thinking about a house and how it's going to be designed, you know, I'm moving through it and I really want to look at all aspects of that room, what the ceilings look like, what's happening on the walls, you know, what are we going to do to make it feel special
right. And
detailed, but not like overdone. And that for me is like the most important thing now.
Welcome to Talk Shop. I'm Ariel Oaken, a New York-based interior designer, writer, and editor looking to bring a little bit of magic into our homes every day. After years as a writer and editor in the interiors world, I founded my own editorial site, Fenimore Lane, in 2020, and the Talk Shop interview series was born. Each week, I delve into the personal experiences of the top interior designers and tastemakers around the globe. This week, we're headed for the Northwest and welcoming Seattle-based designer Heidi Callier to the podcast. A master of pattern and tone, Heidi is known for her unexpected blend of elements and styles, with her layered, lived-in spaces feeling well-traveled, timeless, and fresh. Drawing on the sentiment of nostalgia, Heidi believes that decor and furniture should possess a timeless quality which grows with the home. Before starting her Seattle-based full-service interior design firm, Heidi came to the design world through her blog, which would lead to her first job at a design firm. After working under the tutelage of other designers for a few years, Heidi eventually started her own studio. Aided by a small team from her space in Seattle, Heidi oversees high-end residential and hospitality projects across the United States. And while location and architecture inform her creative direction, the desires and lifestyle of every client always steer her narrative. Please join me as we welcome Heidi to the podcast. Heidi, welcome to the podcast. I'm so happy to have you on.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Well, to kick off the conversation, we ask everyone who comes on, you describe your style in three words or less.
Oh, I get asked this all the time. Eclectic, timeless, and layered.
I think that's spot on. I'm actually looking at your book right now. It's on my desk, and that main cover image. I mean, those are definitely the three words I would pick to describe that photo.
Good. I love it. I get asked that all the time. I never know how to answer it.
I know. It's like a little exercise in editing, I always tell everyone.
Totally.
So for those who may not know, which is basically absolutely no one listening to this podcast, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and where you are at this point in your career right now and just a little overview?
I am an interior designer, currently based near Seattle, Washington, and I have a team of six people now, which is crazy. We've grown a lot over the past kind of year and a half, and we work on projects all over the country. So we do work on projects in the Pacific Northwest, but we also work on projects, you know, California, Montana, all up and down the East Coast, Idaho, Washington, D.C., New York, all over the place.
It's amazing. I know. I feel like you guys have exploded in the past year. It's like so exciting to see, and just the book and everything that's come out in the past year. It's so exciting.
It is. It's been very exciting. You know, it's been interesting because, you know, the firm has grown very organically, I think, over the past kind of 8 years. And I have grown very, you know, slowly in terms of my firm.
Yeah.
So it seems, you know, from the inside, it's all kind of happened at the same time as we've grown and hired people and gotten more business and expanded. And it just feels kind of, you know, it's nice. I always want to remain a little bit small.
Yeah. It's funny. I was reading something somewhere that said Miles Rudd was quoted saying Albert Hadley told him to always stay small because it helps you kind of control over the product that you're putting out. And it also just kind of helps the firm stay cohesive.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I really want, you know, I want a personal connection with all of my team. You know, we talk all the time. And despite the fact that everyone is remote, which is its own set of
problems. Your whole team is remote?
My whole team is remote.
Wow. That's so cool.
Yeah, no, it's, I mean, I haven't really had a choice. You know, we live outside of Seattle and, you know, my office is in a freestanding building, you know, near our house, kind of in our backyard.
Right.
And I really never intended to like have a big team. And, you know, I still do all the design work. I just hired my first kind of designer who's been helping me that, but that's a first, and everyone else has been project managers. And so it's just kind of been out of necessity. And yeah. I think we're figuring it out. It definitely is challenging. And I really miss, you know, being with them in person, but
yeah,
we're working it out.
But I'm sure you guys also meet like on site visits and things like that when you're going. Yeah. We have a similar structure. Our operations director who like started with me when I started my firm 10 years ago lives in Austin.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I have someone in Austin as well.
Oh, really? It's such a cool city.
It is. I love it there.
But there are so many benefits to having a remote team. And I think the girls really appreciate the flexibility. And then it makes it that much sweeter when you guys are all in person together.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it really is, you know, we really try to take care of each other. And because you don't really get the chance to kind of create that culture that you get in an office, like we really all work hard at like being there, supportive, and just everyone becoming friends in their own way. So it really does work. And, you know, in terms of like having projects everywhere, like it's so helpful because, you know, I have the team in Charleston and they can take care of the East Coast projects. So I don't have to fly all the way across the country. And then, you know, it just works out really nicely for all of us to kind of be scattered and then come together when necessary.
Totally. So let's chat a little bit about your career so far, because you have a really interesting path toward design. You have a master's degree in public health, right?
Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm. That is so cool. I actually have a master's degree in public affairs.
Oh.
So I went to grad school and I wanted to go into politics and then pivoted. So let's talk about that. Were you always interested in design? Like,
no.
Really?
Yeah. In hindsight, and you know, writing the book and doing the book was really like a nice process for me just to kind of like reflect back a little bit on where it all came from. You know, if you would have asked me 2 years ago before I started the book, I would have said like, no, I really, you know, didn't always have an interest in design. But, you know, spending time on the book and just thinking a lot about my trajectory, like I really did. You know, I was the person when I was younger who like did my bedrooms and always wanted to paint my walls and wanted to, you know, duvet cover. And so in hindsight, yes, but I think I just veered very far from that path. You know, I wasn't raised in a house where interior design was a thing, you know, it wasn't even in my language or vocabulary to think like that could be a career.
Mm-hmm.
So no, I mean, I wanted to be a doctor, you know, in my early high school years. And then I really wanted to do like the Peace Corps and...
Which could not be further from...
Exactly. I'm like, how did I end up here? So I really did, you know, I went to undergrad on the East Coast and I have a degree in sociology. And then I went straight to graduate school in New Orleans and got my master's in public health. And then, and it took me a while to land on this. I mean, I've had my firm for about 9 years now, 10 years close to, and it wasn't like a straightforward path by any means.
Yeah. I mean, I had a similar kind of experience in terms of it not being linear. And I think it kind of helps. It definitely helps you sort of feel so lucky that you get to do what you do every day.
Yes.
And it just kind of puts all of that into perspective that like, oh my God, I can't believe that this is what I get to do.
No, 100%. And I also feel like, you know, it took me a long time to find the career that I wanted to do. I tried so many different things and nothing ever felt right. You know, it just never stuck. I'd do something for a little while and then either get bored of it or think like, this isn't what I'm supposed to be doing. And interior design is really been the only thing that's ever stuck for me. You know, it feels so right. I know it's what I'm supposed to be doing. I love all aspects of the job. I love that there's so many different facets to doing this as a career. It's not just the creative part. And so,
yeah,
it keeps me going for sure.
It's so interesting. Walk us through your career so far, because you started with a blog.
I started with a blog, yes. I moved to San Francisco from New Orleans and was just kind of unsure what I wanted to do. And I was, you know, it was kind of like the heyday of the blogs. Blogs were like really big. I was waking up every Saturday morning with coffee, you know, reading blogs for hours.
I remember it well.
Yeah, totally. Just get lost. It was like tumblers and I just got into it and I realized like, oh, I really do love this. And I was like, I'm going to start a blog. And, you know, it was one of those kind of career things where I was like, I'm going to become a blogger.
Yeah.
And I did blog for a while. And, you know, once it came time to like start thinking about making money on it and monetizing, like I could never really wrap my mind around it. And I really got to the point where I was like, I'm not sure I want to be writing about this anymore. Like, I think I actually want to be doing it.
It's similar almost sort of like to Paloma.
Yeah, totally.
And Erin Deeds. I mean, there was like a whole grouping of designers from, you know, that started out with a blog and then kind of very quickly realized, oh, I'm actually really good at this and I'm going to start a firm.
Well, and I think it was back in the day era where you could do that. You know, like you could start being a designer with like very little experience.
You still can now. I think it's just harder for people to find you. I mean, there's just, it's so saturated now.
That's how it feels to me too. I just feel like there's so many options with Instagram. Everyone just has so much more knowledge too. Yeah. That's what it feels like to me.
I agree.
So I'm not sure you can still do, I don't know. You probably can still do it. I just think it would be so much harder. I mean, Instagram wasn't even a thing then.
I know. It was pre-social media.
Totally.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. But people did find me from my blog, which is also mind-blowing to me.
So you're a self-taught designer. Do you ever feel like you wish you went to design school, or do you think that being self-taught, and I'm self-taught too, so I like love having this discussion. Do you think it kind of gives you an edge in some way?
I do. I've never wished that I went to design school. I kind of have always been like, I don't understand why you would. What's the point? Like, if, you know, I'm like, what are these classes? Color theory. And like, I don't know. It just always feels like you can figure that out yourself or your own taste, or no one can, I don't think someone can teach that part to you.
I know. I agree. I do think the technical is obviously stuff that can be taught, but I think some of that innate, the color pairings and things like that, it's way harder to teach, I think.
I agree. I mean, the only thing I ever wished that I knew back in the day was CAD, because I still don't, but now that, you know, I realize you can hire everything out, I'm like, I have no desire to learn that program.
I don't know how to do it either. Yeah. It's a completely fascinating world to me. I watch the girls do it on, you know, in the office, and I'm just like mesmerized by their technical skills.
Same. And then anytime someone used to, you know, I worked for a few other designers before I went out on my own. And anytime I would, you know, fake it that I knew CAD, because I took, you know, an 8-week class or something at UC Berkeley Extension, and they'd be like, plot the lines and do this to print. And I'm always like, what are you talking about?
It's so hard. I mean, it's pure math too, which is like usually every designer's worst nightmare.
Yeah.
Interesting. So you worked for a few designers before you went out on your own. What was that experience like?
Overwhelming. You know, I worked for two designers in the Bay Area when I lived there, and I just had no idea what I was doing. I think most people now understand a little bit more about like the complexity of this job, but like I didn't know what a CFA was. I didn't know there could be different die lots. I didn't know.
When I started, I was the same way. I knew literally nothing. And I think,
isn't that crazy? You know, I still am constantly learning. Don't you feel like you're constantly learning still?
Always, always. Yeah. If you feel like you're not, then you're not growing anymore. And then that's not good.
Yeah, no, I totally agree.
One of the things that I always say that I wish was to work for a firm for a few years before I went out on my own, because I started at Home Polish. So I was just right out of the gate on my own.
I did Home Polish too.
Oh yeah. I totally forgot.
That's so funny.
Yes. The Home Polish experience was amazing and also disorienting at the same time, because it was like, okay, here you go. And you just kind of run with it, which was incredible. But also, you know, you made a few mistakes in the beginning and you had to really learn very quickly what you were doing. So I always tell people that reach out for career advice, like, I think, you know, design school is wonderful to learn technical skills, but if you really want to learn about the industry, I think working at a firm is the best thing you can do.
Home Polish was helpful for me in terms of like figuring out, you know, how to do things, how not to do things. And, you know, really, I don't know about you, but I did lots of, you know, $10,000 projects. Yeah. So, but working in a firm, I think, can be really helpful, just because, especially if you don't have any exposure to what this job looks like how to structure a firm, how you bill, you know, what the back end looks like, how you order, like how you work with showrooms, like all of that is kind of a mystery unless you've worked with a firm.
100%.
So that can be really, really helpful, I think.
Do you think your aesthetic has developed over the years since you founded your firm?
Definitely. And I think it's continuing to develop.
Yeah, I think that happens too. Why do you think that is?
Well, for me, I just always want to be growing. Like there's so many goals I have for the firm and for myself and for the future and all of that. But like really at the heart of it, I just want to keep getting better.
Yeah.
And that is something that really drives me and motivates me. And so I'm constantly learning. I'm like a sponge. You know, I'm looking at Instagram. I'm always looking for new sources. Like, did someone tag this? Oh, I've never heard of this vendor. What's this side table? Like, I don't love to do the same thing over and over again. I want every project to feel different and better. I'm constantly pushing myself, like, let's make this next one better. How can we improve the interior architecture? You know, What are other tricks we can do in terms of layout? What are fabrics we haven't used that we're, you know, interested in? Can we do things that are custom?
Totally.
Our own things. Like for me, that's where the joy in this job really is.
Absolutely. It's the fun.
Totally. The fun part. Like the creating. So
yeah.
If you're not like focusing on that and having fun with it, I think like, what's the point?
Absolutely.
But I don't know about you, but I mean, I'm constantly looking at new design books, new designers like, oh, I should do this or look at that great idea. And my aesthetic has definitely evolved.
Yeah. I think as you grow and you spend the time, I mean, on the weekends when my kids are napping or watching Bluey or whatever, I'm delving into the newest book that I've got, or I'm doing research on, you know, Swedish painting technique. Like it's so esoteric, this whole world that we're in. And I think the joy of it comes from uncovering these little Easter eggs of how can you make it better. And also not just on the design side, but on the business side too, right? What's an organizational structure that will help you guys function better? Or how can you streamline your billing? Like all of those things. I think when you really love what you do, it's kind of fun to like delve into those things.
Absolutely. I could not agree more.
I love that. I feel like we're kindred spirits on this. I know. Like hearing you talk about it, we talk about that all the time at the firm. I don't like repeating fabrics.
Same.
I like to just constantly be using new vendors, and that's what makes it fun. And I think that's also how the girls grow too. You know, the people on our team, I think, you know, the more we expose everybody to, the more we all grow.
Oh gosh, I know, Ariel, I couldn't agree more. You know, my team always, I can see, you know, we have like a big presentation this week, for example, and we put lots of new things in there, or like, you know, oh, we're going to have to find a way to build this, or this is a different detail on this built-in. We're going to have to find a vendor for it. And I know they feel challenged by it, but I think in a very good way, you know, like, because I want them to always be learning too.
Yeah. I think that's the beauty of being somewhere where you're kind of like, you know, as a designer, and I'm sure there's plenty of designers that are listening to this that are at firms, I think that's a really great quality to have in your work, where you're like a little bit out of your comfort zone, but you know what? You're learning so much from it.
Yeah. And even as a designer, I mean, it sounds like you feel the same way. Like, you know, I want to be pushing the envelope a little bit with myself to be like,
okay,
let's push this a little bit, you know, like challenge yourself to do something that feels new and fresh and like excites me.
Every time. Yeah. You know, I think when you start doing the same thing frequently and every room kind of looks the same, I think there's a difference between someone being able to identify your work versus all of your work looking the same. There's like a distinction there, and you have mastered it beautifully, because I really do love your book.
Thank you so much. It's okay.
So let's talk about founding your own firm a little bit. What drew you to branch off? I mean, you were working at other firms, and what kind of drew you to branch off to do your own thing?
I mean, it was kind of a mix. You know, I was working at a firm. I had been taking home polish projects the whole time, which was really amazing in hindsight that my bosses let me do that.
Yeah, that was amazing.
So I was getting kind of my feet wet there. And, you know, aesthetically, I was working for designers that I felt like I liked their work, but like I just wanted to do something a little different. And, I wanted the flexibility. You know, when you're working for a firm, like there's a ceiling. And that always kind of like, I felt like I was going to be held back always. So I just wanted to do it on my, I wanted to try it on my own and see what happened. I went into it with like the lowest of hopes, I think. I never thought I was going to be big or that I was going to be recognized in any way. You know, I really just wanted to do the work.
That means that you love it.
Exactly. Like I always come back to that, because, you know, this job is not easy. It can be really hard and stressful and,
oh yeah,
really miserable sometimes.
I know. And people don't realize that. Yeah. I mean, I talked about that with Bridget Romanek, who was on recently, and talking about, you know, it is a service business. And there are times when it's very stressful, or something doesn't come in, or something's wrong, or the custom rug from India comes in incorrectly and you have to eat it, you know, all those things.
Yeah.
But when you love it, it kind of makes it worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, starting the firm came from that. And then we moved, you know, back, I got pregnant with my sons and we moved back to be close to family. And we moved to Seattle just at the right time. The design scene was kind of very young still here and felt a little bit antiquated, and there was young tech money coming into the city, and the timing could not have been better. I got clients right off the bat because my aesthetic was so different from what anyone else was doing here.
It is so different. It's like moody and layered, but really warm and cozy. And that's very niche, you know? And I feel like it's like so hard to pull off too.
Which I never understood why you wouldn't want that in the Pacific Northwest, because it is so gray.
Gray. Yeah. It's like the perfect backdrop for your area, and it makes so much sense.
Yeah. So it really was embraced here, which was very nice. And it, as I said, kind of in the beginning, it has been very, very organic. I never have been like the person who's like, we're going to grow the firm X percentage this year, right, and hire, you know, in 6 months for this role. Like, it's been very much based on just feelings and what I think needs to come next. And I, you know, the past 2 years have been a lot of growth and me becoming more focused on the business and what the future holds and what's going to be needed for that. But I did it by myself for a very long time. And I always recommend that to people. Like, I think it's really important to know how to do all the roles in your firm.
I agree. But let's talk a little bit about hiring, because so you were on your own for a while. Mm-hmm. When did you decide to make that first hire, and what was it?
So I had a bookkeeper pretty early on, which I think you absolutely have to have for this.
Yeah, you do. I did too. I mean, it's like a non-negotiable.
Yeah, absolutely should be everybody's first hire. I mean, especially we work in so many different states. So the sales tax and it's just crazy. So it's
easy to make a mistake.
Yeah. And you really don't want to make a mistake there, I think.
Yeah.
So I always had kind of a ancillary bookkeeper, never like on staff, but you know, at least part-time. And then I hired a 1099 like drafter. That was the person that was doing AutoCAD for me. So those are my only two people I had for a very long time. I hired my first like project manager in the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And then I have since grown it. So I still have my CAD person. And then now I have another CAD person. And then I have four project managers, one who swings as a designer, but that's really new. I just hired her like 3 months ago.
Wow. That's so fascinating. I mean, I started kind of similarly when I left Home Polish. Our operations director was also at Home Polish with me. We left together. So she's like my left brain, right hand.
That's amazing.
Bookkeeping, ops, like anything operations. And it was just us for a really long time. And then I would do like exactly like you said, 1099, like having people help me with CAD because I couldn't do it. And then right before the pandemic, we added on a project manager because our ops, Laura, was going maternity leave. And that was another Home Polish hire. Home Polish. Yeah, we have like a nice little Home Polish fam.
That's amazing.
But it's so interesting. I mean, I think knowing when you need to add someone to the team is very intuitive. And it sounds like you, across the board, in terms of like growth for your business, you're sort of always listening to your intuition versus looking at numbers and saying, you know, oh, we need to hit this amount of growth in a year or something like that. It feels very natural to you.
It does feel natural. I mean, I think I tell this to everyone all the time. I'm like, I still think the business is going to go away tomorrow. So I'm never the person that's like, great, we had a great year last year. We're going to have a great year this year. We're going to grow 10%. Like, I'm always like, this will be the last year of my business because it's all going to go away. So I have always had that mindset, which is probably, you know, it's not the best, but it has given me a bit of restraint in terms of like, let's not go all out and hire 10 people. Like, let's take this, you know, in strides.
Mm-hmm. I think it's smart because you're never overextending yourself.
Exactly. Like, I don't want to get to the point where I feel like I have to take on projects I don't want to because
yes,
I have bills to pay. So I think there's a really fine balance right there that you have to, I mean, we're definitely busy. So I'm sure my team could be
I'm sure you're busy. How many projects are you working on right now?
Oh gosh. I think it's always between like 15 and 20 active projects.
Oh my God.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Good for you. That's amazing.
It's good. It's exciting. But you know how it goes. Like, you think, you know, we try to plan out a calendar. We've gotten much better about our calendar the past year and a half, but we try to plan out a calendar. But you know how it goes with jobs. You know, we have stuff that would have finished out 6 months ago where they're in small towns in Colorado and it's taking, you know, an extra 8 months. So it's really difficult. This job is really difficult. It's not linear.
No, it's not. And it's nothing you can plan, but like, it's like, okay, that's nice that you made that plan, but that's just not happening anymore.
That's intentions.
Are there any projects that you're particularly like most proud of?
Oh my gosh, we have so much stuff in the pipeline right now that's it's currently being done, like construction. And it has just been, you know how it goes, it kind of goes in waves. Like,
yes, it does.
The things I tell people it takes to like get a project to installation is just mind-blowing. Right. Some of these projects that we're going to shoot this year, like we designed, you know, like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
I'm like really excited about everything that we're completing this year.
I feel like you have ebbs and flows of like, you'll have like a shoot year because all of the stuff that you worked on, you know, 2-3 years prior has all wrapped and it's like styled and ready to go. Mm-hmm. We had a shoot year last year and we shot like 6 projects at once. And I was like, we need a break.
Oh, I know.
And there's like a building year where you're like, you know, it goes in waves.
It does. And Ariel, you know, it's so interesting because in this day and age with like social media and the pace at which all of that moves, like the years that are not shoot years can leave you like feeling a little bit like anxious. Like,
yeah, because you're like, oh no, I don't have content to share. And it's also really hard when something gets picked up for print.
Oh, I know.
You know, or you're holding projects for your book. Mm-hmm. You can't put the new stuff out there. And that's really tricky too, because it's like you have to find different avenues of content to create.
Yeah, no, I mean, we just had this call internally because we're shooting so many big projects. And I was like, I think that we're going to pitch. And then we have a few projects we shot last year that are, you know, are waiting for publication. So
yeah,
we're like, we need to shoot some of the smaller ones just so that we have content to show.
Yeah, you're like almost in a holding pattern when because you get these press embargoes and you can't post anything. And then it's like you're recycling the same photos.
I know. And then, you know, on top of because the press embargoes, you know, you have projects, you're like, well, I've been working on it for 3 years. We finally shot it. And now I'm going to sit on it for another year.
Yeah.
And you're just like, by the time the project comes out, you're like, I'm tired of looking at this.
It's hard. Well, let's pivot to interior design a little bit. Is there a favorite element about the design process for you?
Oh my gosh, I love it all. You know, as I've grown as a designer, like I really have, you know, I see the whole picture now. So when I'm thinking about a house and how it's going to be designed, you know, I'm moving through it and I really want to look at all aspects of that room, what the ceilings look like, what's happening on the walls, you know, what are we going to do to make it feel special and detailed, but not like overdone. And that for me is like the most important thing now.
I feel like that's such a key element of your work too, because it has a lot of rich detail and layers, but it doesn't feel busy. Mm-hmm. And that's really hard to accomplish.
Yeah, I think I always want it to feel a little bit like it's not overly designed, which is a hard thing to do. Yeah, but I'm always striving for that. And I mean, I just want to do, you know, at this point, like I just want to do stuff that feels fresh and interesting and like excites me. You know, we have a presentation this week in San Francisco and I'm, you know, we have been doing kind of an internal design review before, a big one.
Yeah, I do.
And I'm so excited about it. And that is like the fun part.
The presentation is the best because it's like clients seeing it for the first time with fresh eyes. You're so proud of the work that you've done. You want to show them and hear their feedback. Like that's gearing up for a presentation is like stressful and hectic and also so fun.
So fun. And it's also before like anything's changed. So you're like,
right. You're like, this is my idea of what it should look like before any comments come back.
Exactly. This is it in my head before it goes to the graveyard.
Totally. When you're designing a room, is there any aspect that you think is sort of like the most important to focus on?
I mean, I love textiles so much.
Me too.
And so I haven't just pulled up your portfolio again because I haven't looked at it in a little while, but you know, it's pretty.
Thank you. That's so nice.
And you have that same love of textiles, which I love. I just love fabrics. I love finding new textiles. I love using vintage textiles that no one knows what they are. Like that for me is really like what I love, love, love. So the rooms kind of start with that. Like I start playing with wall coverings or textiles on the wall or textiles that we're going to use for the bed or the draperies or whatever it is. And the rest of the room kind of develops from there.
Yeah, that's how we do it too. I start with a floor plan and then I fill it in. And then, so it's floor plan and then fabric.
Yep, same.
Do you think there's a design rule that you always follow, or do you think there's one that's like definitely made to be broken?
I think there are no rules that I follow. I mean, I pretty much at this point think like all the colors go together and you can find a way to make, you know, all the patterns work. I think it's a scale.
I think scale is the most important rule.
Yeah, I think as long as I start the same way. We start with the furniture layout and, you know, all of that. And I think scale in terms of furniture is also really important. And then scale in terms of like patterns and all of, you know, the light fixtures and everything. I think that can totally throw a room when you get that wrong.
Oh, yeah.
So I think that is really important.
Looking back through your career, have you had a mentor in your career? And if so, have they sort of helped to shape your trajectory at all?
So I worked for a showroom in the San Francisco Design Center when I lived there, kind of in between my design jobs, which was a really valuable experience. And I always tell young designers they should do that.
That's a great piece of advice. That's so true.
You really learn the other side.
Yeah.
so helpful. So the woman that owned that showroom was a family-owned showroom. And the woman that owned that really was like kind of my business mentor in terms of like, I learned a lot from her of like how to run a business, how to be, you know, with your team. And that was really valuable. But aside from that, no, I never really had a mentor. Of course, there's other designers that I love and admire. And, you know, I've listened to every business design podcast you could ever imagine.
Me too.
I love them all.
Yes. I think you learn so much from those. I think they really help you think about structuring your firm in different ways. And they're so helpful.
Yeah. Business of design, especially for me, you know, like 4 years ago, really changed the way I structured my firm in terms of like presenting a whole house at one time and presenting a budget at the same time and what that looks like.
We do the same thing. Yeah. Laura, who is our operations director, and I did that whole course, and then it changed for us too. You know, it kind of helped us shape our structure.
Yeah, same. I mean, I think, you know, I talk to other designers that I'm friends with and it still kind of blows my mind. I'm like, what do you mean you don't present the whole project at one time? How do you do that?
And when I explain it to people that are just, you know, inquiring, I'll say the house has to flow. So if you're only getting rooms piecemeal, it's a lot harder to envision what the house is going to be at the end point. And you don't necessarily have to pull the trigger on everything all at once, but you do need the design plan all at once at the same time.
Yeah. And the budget, you know, I even thinking about how we used to do things, I used to do things by myself, you know, 5 years ago, you know, I'm like, how can you make decisions? You don't even have an idea what the whole budget is.
Totally. Yes. We present a full FF&E budget at the full house presentation because they go hand in hand, right? Like if you're going to approve things, you need to, conversely, if you need to value engineer, you need to know what you're looking at so that you can make the decisions in the context of everything that's being shown to you before you can say yes to anything.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I mean, I also, you know, being small for so long and just on my own, like it kind of forced me into that. And I'm really glad that it did because, you know, it was just so busy that I couldn't imagine like, oh no, when I present a project, like I need to be done with it.
And it also keeps things really clean and tight and tidy.
Yes.
And I think when you operate a business that way, clients really appreciate that element.
I agree. And for me, in terms of, I don't know if you're the same way, but it allows me like a clean break from the design a little bit so that I can move on to the next project and have like a fresh, clean slate. I mean, I always tell our potential clients, like when I'm designing a project, I'm just designing that project actively.
Yeah. And you're all in on it.
Yeah. You're all in. I think that's how you get the best result.
Yeah. We're the same way. It's like we sort of like delve in all in on one project on the creative. And then once that's approved, it goes to our ops team to handle all the purchasing and the logistics and all that. And then we move on to the next creative. So we sort of like tag team between design and ops. And I think it's a really, really smart way for designers to be able to be all in on the design.
Yeah, I completely agree.
So let's talk a little bit about you personally. What do you think your home says about you?
My home was like I feel like my home really changed me as a designer. Mm-hmm. Been in it for about 5 years now. And it's an old house. It's a 1920s Tudor. And it really feels like a reflection of me, like, and my family.
Yeah.
You know, it's layered. It's like a little bit eclectic, but it's got like, you know, lots of textiles and color and pattern, and it just feels good. And
so beautiful.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. It was like the first time I really felt like I knew myself as a designer when I did my house. Like I was like, this is who I want to be as a designer, this way this is.
Yeah. It gives you the opportunity. It's almost like a little laboratory, like it gives you the opportunity to explore all the things that you might not necessarily feel comfortable yet showing to a client, or you're not entirely confident to do with a project. But when you do it in your own home, it really feels like a true expression of what you're interested in and what your home kind of reflects about you and your family.
Yeah. And it's interesting because my design aesthetic has, you know, it shifts and changes and grows and all of that. But I often think, you know, because we think about moving or changing houses sometimes, and I'm like, what would the next house look like? Mm-hmm. Is this house still, even if I may not do everything the same, like it still feels so good to me.
Yeah. That's how you know that you love it though. I know. I feel that way about our house too. Sometimes I'll look at, you know, a room that's really clean and tailored and it's, you know, like a Rose Tarlow kind of like very, very neutral. And I'm like, oh, that's so gorgeous. I want to redo the whole house. But then I'm like, I love my house because it's me. And like, the neutrals aren't me. And I love a Suzani thrown over the back of a sofa. And so I understand that.
Absolutely.
What are some of your favorite places to shop for home?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I'm a first dibs junkie through and through.
Yeah, me too. Anything vintage.
Anything vintage. I shop vintage everywhere, like constantly looking, like you said, like it'll be Saturday morning, everyone in my house is sleeping and I'm like on the internet, falling down a rabbit hole looking for tables or something random.
Yeah.
And, but what I love about people are always like, do you buy all your vintage on first? No, not even close, but it does allow you to like find things that you weren't looking for.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you how many things I've been like, oh, that's a really cool light fixture that's, they're showing me like my recommended things. And then it opens up this whole different world. Mm-hmm. And I just love that. That's like my favorite.
I know. It's like a path of discovery. I cherish and first dibs. Mm-hmm. I think you can also educate yourself a lot on different periods, different styles of furniture, just by like really reading up on the things that you find and like, and then you can like learn more about them.
Absolutely.
Where do you find inspiration? Do you find yourself like kind of gravitating toward social media? Is it vintage books? Is it travel? Is it
all of the above? I mean, yeah, I definitely get inspired whenever I travel. My kids are a little bit older now, so it's been possible. Like I just got back from a trip to Morocco with a friend and we did Italy last summer.
So nice. How old are your boys?
They are 8.
Oh, you have twins?
I do. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh my God. You're a busy lady.
Totally.
Oh my God. I look forward to, I mean, I'm in the nursery school stage, which I love because it is, it's magic. It's also exhausting. It's exhausting and magic, but I really look forward to the stage when I can travel because that's something that I feel like you just cannot do when your kids are little and there's so much to see and so much, you know, to take in from a design perspective.
I know it really does help you. You know, I do get, I think because like I didn't, you know, we still traveled when the kids were young, but like not, you know, we're like Hawaii and Mexico.
Yeah. Like you're not going to Morocco.
Exactly. With, like, and you're not. Taking, you know, yeah. Kind of so, you know, I did find inspiration in other ways during those years, you know, so I do find inspiration on social media. I'm a big book fan. You know, old books, I'm constantly collecting design books and referring to them. So, and I think it's a combination of those things, you know, but travel just adds that extra element where it's like, you're, you know, like when I was in Italy, it's like, you're seeing these crazy tile patterns or like, you know, the beauty and imperfection, like that's what really always comes through to me when I travel. And like, that doesn't always come through in books or on social media because everyone's trying to curate this kind of like perfect aesthetic. So
totally.
The travel really is a big factor.
I'm thinking about marble countertops right now and how in Italy, like all the bar tops are just perfectly patinaed. And here it's like, everybody's like terrified to, you know, spill a drop of wine on their island. It's like, no, live in it. Let it live. The patina is what makes it cool and pretty.
Like it's so much prettier. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. What do you think the three biggest influences on your aesthetic in your life have been?
I love old houses. And I think having lived in places where there were like, you know, I grew up kind of all over the country, but I spent some formative years on the East Coast, like Berkshire's, upstate New York, and I also lived in New Orleans. And that really like cemented my love of like old architecture, old homes. And that is something that stays with me still to this day.
Yeah. You can see that in your work too.
Oh, I love that. I mean, it's interesting being on the West Coast because it's not the same reality.
Definitely different. I mean, especially New Orleans, you have such an amazing array. And upstate New York, I mean, you have these beautiful fieldstone homes and it's different on the West Coast, but also beautiful. I mean, there are some really amazing, interesting architectural periods out where you are too.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just a little bit different. So that is one of them for sure. I mean, my love of color and pattern, I don't really know where that comes from.
It's the counterbalance to all that gray. And
totally. I mean, I'm definitely heavily influenced by British design. I love it. It's so colorful and happy. And there's like an
comfortable, warm,
an imperfection, you know, like sofas that are made with downfill. So they sag a little bit. Like this all really appeals to me.
Yeah.
And that is definitely something that I feel really strongly about.
I love that. I feel like you and I are very much on the same page.
I know, I do too.
Next time you're in New York, we're going to go out.
Absolutely. We have to.
Who are your, do you have any style icons?
Ooh, like interior design style icons?
Yeah. Or it could just be like,
yeah, I mean, tons. What I think is so interesting about design, it's like just what you were just saying about like a Rose Tarlow room or whatever. Like there's so many different styles that I love. Like, I mean, her latest book was like, or Rose and Nat's latest book, it was like incredible, like just beautiful.
Mind blowing. I know.
It's like not how I design.
Yes.
Like, there's parts of it that I take from it and I'm like, I want to put that in my own work, or like, this is going to influence this, or
absolutely.
Yeah. And like, I've always, I mean, I think Studio Shamshiri does like just next level, like amazing, amazing work. She's always been such a influence to me. And then there's, I mean, everyone, I'm looking at all the design books in my office and I'm like, Rita Koenig is a big icon of mine. Like, I love her work so much.
I know, I love her.
Just timeless. I mean, Gil Schaefer cannot do any wrong.
I know. We just interviewed him. And I was so excited to interview him because I was so starstruck. It's like interviewing like, you know, the president. It was so exciting.
Absolutely.
So talented.
Yes. So talented.
Do you collect anything?
I do. I collect Majolica plates.
Do you hang them on the wall?
I do. I have them in my dining room. Yeah.
I love that. Majolica is like having a major comeback right
now. Big time. I know. Which kind of makes me sad.
I know. I like when things are under the radar and like a little weird and not, you know, everywhere.
And now I feel like everyone's putting plates on walls. But I also know, like, people ask me all the time and podcasts, whatever, like, oh, trends. And I'm like, you know, it's a trend for a little while and then I'm still going to keep collecting them.
Yes.
And so the trend will go away and it'll still be timeless.
All right, well, let's go into our rapid fire. We do our take 10 at the end of every episode. They don't have anything to do with design, really, but I like asking them because they're kind of, it's more about you as a person. So what is your favorite food?
Pasta.
Yes.
Or dessert. I love dessert. Yeah.
Okay. I'm with you. Favorite drink?
Margarita.
Yeah, anything tequila, I'm in.
Yeah, same.
Favorite film?
Oh, gosh, that is a really hard question. Favorite.
I know. And it doesn't have to be like, it could be like your comfort movie, like something that you just watch all the time when you need something familiar.
I never watch the same thing twice.
Oh, you and my mom. My mom is the same way.
My husband watches the same thing over and over and over again.
I'm like that.
Are you watching this again?
Yeah. I just rewatch Nancy Meyers movies all the time.
Oh, I do love those too. I mean, I watch, like I've seen, you know, I think Call Me By Your Name is so inspiring just because I love the whole aesthetic and vibe.
Yeah.
And that really resonates with me.
Yeah. That movie visually is so beautiful.
Stunning.
Yeah. Favorite hotel?
Oh gosh, that's a good question too. I mean, whenever I'm in New York, I stay at the Ludlow.
Yeah. It's such a cool hotel.
Home to me. I love the neighborhood. That's probably my favorite right now. You know, Ariel, you can totally relate to this too because you have young kids. I was asked this question on one of my book tour things.
Yeah.
And I was like, I wish that I could say that I was staying in like the most beautiful hotel in Rome, and I am definitely not doing that with my kids.
No.
Oh, but I did just stay at, when I was in Morocco, I stayed at El Fen in Marrakech.
Oh, that's really on my bucket list.
Oh, it was visually so stunning.
Yeah, that one is really, I have like a list of places that are on my bucket list from when the girls get older, and that's definitely on there. Mm-hmm. Favorite city?
New Orleans.
Oh, yes. The antiquing is incredible there.
I also loved Rome. I really want to, we did Rome last summer with the kids, and I'm like, I really want to go back without the kids.
That's a cool place to take the kids too, because like there's a lot of great like art museums. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The food is really awesome. We haven't been in so long. I think the last time we were there was like, honestly, maybe our honeymoon.
Yeah. I loved it. My husband and I both loved it so much. And it was great with the kids. I think it would also be nice without them for a few days.
Yes. Anywhere is nice without them.
Totally.
Nice. Favorite bedding?
It is Deport Home.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I love. I've used it in a few of our recent projects where like the interior, like the fabrics and are like a little more simple, and then the bedding is the moment. I love it.
I have the little heart Porto pillows in my daughter's room. I mean, I couldn't do the whole bed in it, so I did just like the little heart pillows, and it just adds so much to a bed. And Porto, I mean, that's something that you can pass down.
Totally.
They're really like almost like an heirloom type of linen.
They really can make the whole room.
Tea or coffee, and how do you take it?
Coffee all the way, and I take it with just a little bit of milk and a little bit of sugar.
Favorite playlist?
Ooh, It's interesting. I don't really listen to music while I work. Do you?
I listen to jazz or classical. I cannot listen to anything with words Same. While I'm working. It's so interesting. I've spoken it because we asked people this question and like a lot of designers have said the same thing, which I think is really interesting.
Yeah, I can't. I have some designer friends who do listen to stuff with words. I'm like, I can't focus.
No, I can't either. And when I'm writing, I need silence. I can't write.
Oh, yeah. On. I mean, right now on my Spotify, my background music is Manchester Orchestra, which I love.
Yeah.
I've got jazz in the background, Zella Day.
Oh, that's my playlist that I love. Jazz in the background. I love that one. It's so easy.
I know. We put it on to chill our kids out in the morning too.
I play that at dinner time.
That's so
because
funny.
My kids get so hyper at night.
Totally. Oh my God. We were on the same page. We do the exact same thing. That's so funny.
I'll like dim the lights. Yep. We'll play Go Fish. We'll listen to that. It's such a great playlist.
I agree.
That's really funny. Favorite weekend activity?
Going out to dinner.
Yeah, I know. It's so nice to just like get out when you're working so hard during the week and then you're like, you know, you also have the slog of like dinner and brush teeth and bedtime and pajamas. And it's like nice to like put on real clothes and like have dinner with your partner.
Absolutely. Have a glass of wine. Yeah. I also love to read design magazines on the weekend and design books.
This is the last question. And I think the hardest question, what is your favorite design book?
I mean, I refer back to Gil Shaver's book all the time.
He's just such a master of what he does.
It's just like timeless. It's timeless.
Yeah. And his books are really educational. Like you really learn so much from them.
I agree. I also love the Min Hog Interiors book, which I think is so good.
Yeah, that's a classic.
And then the Isabel Lopez Quesada book is also wonderful, I think.
Ooh, I actually, you know what? I don't have that one.
Oh, you have to get it. So good.
I will.
I love her work.
Yeah, I do too. Oh, that's a really good, it's a good one. Well, a final few words. What are you working on right now? Are there any new projects? I mean, you have 15 projects going on, but are there any you can talk about?
We do. We have some really exciting work. We're wrapping up a project in Colorado that we've been working on for 3 years. We're going to install that, I think, end of April. And we have a project in East Hampton that we finished. We're going to shoot in May that I'm very, very excited about. And then,
fun.
Yes, I can't wait. And then we have a few celebrity projects, which is exciting. And then we're going to shoot in the next probably 9 months. So all good
stuff.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see. Yeah. That's so exciting.
Thank you. It'll be a fun year for shooting.
Yeah. You deserve your shoot year. Yeah. See, it's like all this work. And then it's like you have your big shoot year and it's so rewarding.
Totally. I can't wait.
Do you have any advice for someone looking to define their own interior style?
I mean, I feel like everybody now is inundated with like the, you know, as you said, like aesthetic or, you know, this is what's trendy or this is what everyone's doing. And like, I see so much design that is like recycled and I just get so sick of it. Like, I'm like, you need to find your own voice and you know, I do mentor young designers on The Expert sometimes, and I love those calls. And I always tell people, like, do the work that you want to do.
Mm-hmm. And people will seek you out for it.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Like, don't follow trends. Like, don't look on Pinterest and say, like, oh, this is the sofa that everyone's doing, or everyone's doing granny chic now. I'm going to do that. Like, if that is who you are as a designer and it happens to become trendy, like, keep doing it. And the trend will go away and your work will remain. And you really just have to come from a point, I think, where a place where you're designing to what you want to be doing. And the rest, I think, falls into place.
I love that. And it's so true. Because if you don't have your personal compass and you're just kind of like flailing in all directions, trying to, you know, hop after the latest trend, your portfolio won't make sense.
Totally.
And for people who are not designers, you know, it still applies. Like, I think it's just finding the things that you gravitate toward that you love. It's like that old Billy Baldwin quote, buy the things you love because they'll never go out of style.
Yeah, which it's just, that is so true.
So true.
Yes.
Well, Heidi, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
It's been so fun.
This was like such a delight to chat with you. And the next time you're in the city, we absolutely need to go get lunch or dinner because this was so fun.
Absolutely. We have to.
Where can listeners find more about you and your firm?
My Instagram is Heidi Callier Design. You can also buy my new book, Memories of Home.
Which is fantastic. I'm looking at it right now.
Thank you so much. And then my website is HeidiCalliardesign.com.
Amazing. Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. This was such a dream.
It was so fun to be on.
That's a wrap for this week's episode of Talk Shop. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with more thoughtful discussions and amazing guests. Make sure you follow on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify so you never miss an episode. And of course, follow me at Ariel Oaken. See you next week.